Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ and East County Magazine, bringing you a breaking news bulletin. A vehicle belonging to murder kidnapping suspect James DiMaggio has been found in the Frank Church Wilderness area in Idaho. There's more good news. Horseback riders told authorities they spoke with a man matching DiMaggio's description, and he was with a girl who matched the description of missing Lakeside teenager Hannah Anderson. The riders alerted authorities, and the vehicle was discovered hidden under branches. Its license plate had been removed, but a vehicle identification number confirmed the identity. Sheriff Bill Gore announced today, "I'm very confident, and I think we should all be optimistic that Hannah appeared to be in good health and was alive on Wednesday." He added he hopes law enforcement will find them in the mountains and return Hannah safely home. There was no sign, however, of Hannah's missing brother, 8-year-old Ethan Anderson. The children had been missing since Sunday when their mother was found murdered inside a burned home and boulevard belonging to DiMaggio. The body of a child was also found inside the charred residence, though DNA tests are pending to determine whether it is Ethan. Anyone with information on the case is asked to please call the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ and East County Magazine, and today I'm here with Donna Tisdale. Donna was the recipient of the People's Microphone Award recently from KNSJ. She's known as the Backcountry Warrior. She is the chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, the founder of a nonprofit called Backcountry Against Dumps, and the secretary of the Protect Our Communities Foundation that's known for battling some of the big energy projects. But today, we are here to talk about water issues. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Miriam.
Now, you've been battling the Eco Substation, which got approved, but now I understand you have some concerns about where the water for that project is coming from. What have you found out?
We got the Live Oak Springs water source stopped. It was an unauthorized source, and the Public Utilities Commission stopped it. And now they're bringing water from the Campo Indian Reservation. And I asked for the documents approving that and found that there's some misinformation that was provided to the Public Utilities Commission.
So the Campo Tribe had claimed that they were getting this legally, but you have information that suggests otherwise?
I haven't got all the details about how it was presented, but the consultant's information, in my opinion, is manipulative and misleading.
Now, the water is on their own reservation. How is this a concern for the broader community?
For the tribal community, according to their land use plan, their land use code, and their constitution, and I've discussed this with numerous tribal members to make sure that I have my information correct, and they are required to get approval for the sale of any assets from the general council, which is a majority of all of the adult members 18 and over.
And was that vote taken?
Not according to my information. It was not taken.
And your information is tribal sources.
It's tribal sources. That's all I have to go by. I've seen some minutes, but it's a huge issue because they've widened roads without apparent approval from the general council. They've cleared, I don't know how many acres of Kino checker spot butterfly habitat.
Which is an endangered species.
Endangered species. They're taking water out of the ground from wells without doing any adjacent monitoring.
Could this impact wells off of the reservation as well?
Well, first, I believe it will impact tribal wells because there are several homes right in that area that are on individual wells. And then, of course, off-reservation, there are numerous properties, including my own. We're over the hill, so I believe that the tribal residences and their wells will be impacted first.
How much water are we talking about being used for this Eco Substation? It's an SDG&E Eco Substation in the Inkopah area.
Well, according to documents that were filed with the Public Utilities Commission, they were saying around 50 million gallons.
50 million gallons? That's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water, but later I saw up to 100 million gallons, and we've seen dozens of, I'm assuming they're 10,000-gallon tankers on the road from the City of San Diego or either the Sweetwater Authority. I've done a Public Records Act request asking for those invoices so we can determine how much water is coming in and where it is coming from, including this new Campo source.
Now tell us about the prior a discovery that you made about Live Oak Springs and what all you found out there.
I kept getting calls. At the chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, I get a lot of calls from people on a variety of issues, and I kept getting complaints from people concerned about their small public utilities, Live Oak Springs Water Company, which was run by the manager, the owner and the manager of Live Oak Springs Resort, selling water and not taking care of their infrastructure, which is their only source of water.
And they had many warnings through the years, many fines paid, and somehow they just didn't get the message.
It's a very controversial issue, and so was the person who was the main person, Nazar Nager.
Now, they were finally shut down completely, correct? Not just that particular water usage, but the entire operation.
The entire resort has been put into receivership for failure to pay a bank loan, and now the Public Utilities Commission has recommended that to the court that they put the Live Oak Springs Water Company into receivership as well and find a new manager.
Yeah, hopefully a more responsible one. So, what's the next step on the Campbell Water situation here?
There's a tribal meeting this Sunday, August 11th. The agenda that was put out was bare bones. It didn't have any details on it. We're assuming because they went dark in July that they are going to, this is my opinion, knowing the people that are manipulating this on the tribal side, they want a chance to get the infrastructure in and start pumping the water before they came back to the tribe and said, okay, now let's vote on it.
Well, we've certainly asked the Campbell Tribe for a response on this. We will definitely broadcast their response, and we certainly would welcome having a tribal representative on the show if they're willing to come on and discuss this important issue, Donna. Have there been studies done on how much water can safely be taken from this area without causing problems?
There's been a variety of studies. The current consultant for the bulk water sales from Campo is saying 175 acre feet can be taken, which is contradictory to previous studies. Dr. Victor Miguel Ponce, who I've worked with on numerous studies, did a review of these same wells that were proposed for Chaluk Wind and said a maximum would be 39 acre feet a year.
These are residences that are not on sewer, so well water and groundwater truly is the lifeblood for these communities. Donna, we appreciate you bringing forward this important issue to share with our listeners. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today, Donna.
Thank you.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for KNSJ and East County Magazine in Dalzura. A truck carrying an oversized load became stuck after a part broke down, shutting down Highway 94 for about 50 hours between Dalzura and Tecate as of late Thursday night. Residents were forced to take a detour of nearly an hour and a half. Deerhorn Valley Antler editor Kim Hamilton wants to know why residents were endangered with no notice that this wide, slow-moving load was coming through her community. She said, "Closure of our major evacuation route without notice would create a very dangerous situation in the event of evacuation. Fires happen at all hours, and we are in the middle of a very dicey season." Equally disturbing, the CHP website quit updating its log at noon on Thursday, despite changes in the situation with one lane open temporarily. Then the highway closed again in both directions. Witnesses have indicated that the load appeared to be larger than posted signs allow. So why was it there? Residents are seeking answers, but say that thus far, authorities have not provided this information. Fires are common in this area. Several major blazes have occurred along 94 corridor this year alone. During the 2007 Harris fire, 100-mile-an-hour winds fueled the firestorm. If Highway 94 had been shut down, a tragedy of epic proportions could have occurred. Besides wildfires, lives could also be endangered in the event of a medical emergency, such as the recent case of a child bitten by a rattlesnake who barely made it to the hospital in time. East County Magazine has launched an investigation into this long-term shutdown and threat to public safety. We have asked the California Highway Patrol whether this oversized load was granted a permit, and if so, why? We also asked who owns the truck and what load it was carrying and where it was heading. Most importantly, we asked what steps will be taken to prevent such blockages from occurring in the future in order to protect the safety of residents and travelers in this region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. enjoy our own East County Magazine's Barbecue and Wild West Fest in the countryside of beautiful Descanso in the Cleveland National Forest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. Western reenactors from both the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskill Brothers Gunfighters will be roving through the crowd and later performing comedy skits. Pine Creek Posse will provide live music, so kick up your heels and cowboy boots for some outdoor dancing. Guests will enjoy a delicious special tri-tip and chicken smoked barbecue dinner and browse the silent auction and drawing prizes. We'll have thousands of dollars in prizes, including a Viejas resort vacation, horse supplies, including hay bales from Descanso Hay and Feed, and supplies for Branch Feed and Pet Supply in Jamul, gift certificates from stores, shops, salons, and more. This event benefits the wildfire reporting and emergency alerts that East County Magazine provides during fire season and all year long. Details and information about how to RSVP to our event is on the homepage of our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. You can also reserve tickets by calling 619-698-7617 or simply email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Tickets in advance are $15, which includes the barbecue feast, or $20 at the door. The 6th annual Julian Star Fest unfolds this month from August 8th through 11th, converging at the Mangini Winery just outside Julian. The Star Fest includes a Saturday night star party starting at dusk. The Julian Star Fest also features vendors, a field trip to the Palomar Observatory, and a star-studded lineup of lecturers, including acclaimed night sky photographer Dennis Mamana. Timing is good, as a partial moon will be available for viewing at the beginning of the event. Campers can set up at the winery starting Thursday, and the vendors will arrive on Friday for two full days of events, sales, and lectures. Food will also be available. Brouhaha Comedy is having a special event fundraiser for Bike San Diego on Wednesday, August 7th, featuring comedian Chris Klauber. You must have reservations for this event, and it includes an all-you-can-eat Mediterranean dinner, show, tax, and tip. The mixer starts at 6 p.m., and showtime is at 7:30 p.m. An opportunity drawing will also be held. Western reenactors, the Winchester Widows, hold their annual pancake breakfast on Sunday, August 11th from 8 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. at the Lakeside Elks Club. This breakfast event includes a silent auction and drawing prizes. All proceeds benefit Challenge Ranch for at-risk children. Native American flute players will hold a flute circle featuring Native music on Sunday, August 11th at Mission Trails Regional Park's Outdoor Amphitheater. The concert begins at 1 p.m. Also this week, there are two musical programs at San Diego County Library locations. On August 6th at 6 p.m., the Julian Public Library will feature folk singer-songwriters Shelby and Teague as part of this month's Music on the Mountain series. And husband and wife acoustic duo Sehome McIntosh offers unique melodic storytelling and beautiful harmonies at the Rancho San Diego Library in El Cajon as part of the Acoustic Showcase series. The show begins at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, August 6th. The ongoing Concert in the Garden series at the Cottonwood Golf Club in Rancho San Diego is held every Wednesday evening from 6 to 9 in the Ceremony Garden. The Atomic Blues Band will be playing this Wednesday on August 7th. The Santee Summer Concert Series, now in its 30th year, has performances every Thursday from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. through August 22nd. The series is held at Town Center Community Park in Santee. This Thursday evening's performer, Rockola, plays classic rock. All of these events and activities and more can be found in our Festivals and Events section and in our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around East County.
Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskill Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past.
The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots.
plus the Descansa Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org. This is Miriam Raftery with some very exciting updates about our own Wild West Fest this Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. in Descanso. This is shaping up to be our wildest event yet with some amazing entertainment, prizes, and barbecue feast. The fun takes place at the historic Descanso Town Hall. We've just received word that Wind Spirit Drum, the national award-winning Native American music group, is going to be joining our stellar lineup of performers. We will also have a full half-hour Wild West show featuring the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers Gunfighters. Plus, we'll have a delicious barbecue tri-tip and chicken dinner cooked up by Descanso Junction and live music and dancing thanks to the Pine Creek Posse Band. So bring your dancing shoes or your cowboy boots to kick up your heels and dance the night away at this historic landmark that dates from the 1800s in a very authentic setting. Now, we're also going to have a silent auction and some drawings for prizes. We're actually giving away several $1,000 in prizes at our event, so don't miss the fun. Do you want to be a cowboy for a day or a cowgirl and ride the range on a working cattle ranch? Or we'll be auctioning off this experience for two thanks to Campo Creek Ranch. Or you can win a stay at the brand new Viejas Resort, plus a steakhouse dinner and a shopping spree at the Viejas Outlet Center. How about $165 in hay bales for all you horse owners out there? Or gift certificates to restaurants, salons, markets, major stores and shops, wine baskets, leather bags from McClintock Saddleworks, event tickets to our Magic in the Mountains in Julian, where our talented Native American performers will be next, and much, much more. And it's all to benefit our wildfire reporting and alerts in this very severe fire season. Western wear is encouraged, so round up the family to head on out to Descanso. Descanso Town Hall is located at 24536 Viejas Grade Road in Descanso, just east of Alpine. From Interstate 8, you can just take the Descanso exit toward Cuyamaca, turn left at the Descanso Junction restaurant, and left again on Viejas Grade Road for the wildest event in town. You can make reservations at www.eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. Just $15 if you prepay online or $20 at the door. Includes the Wild West show, the barbecue dinner, the entertainment, the dancing, and the opportunities to win all those prizes. So we hope we'll see you all there.
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
Job Talks on KNSJ's East County Magazine show is supported by our listeners and by the nonprofit San Diego Building Trades Family Housing Corporation, building our future.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting for Iris Neal on today's Jobs Talk. If you are looking for a job or thinking of changing careers, you're going to want to turn your dial up and tune in and listen up, because we have two experts with us today who are going to give you some advice about how times have changed and what you need to know if you're looking for a job in today's market. My first guest is Antonio Viana. He has a long background in human resources. He's an author, career coach, and educator. Welcome, Antonio.
Thank you.
Our other guest today is Raina Menashe. Raina is a social worker, author, and teacher who teaches a life skills class for people who are coming out of rehab or are offenders who've actually spent time in prison. And she helps counsel them, among other things, on what to say when you're looking for a job. So welcome, Raina.
Thank you.
The first thing I'd like to talk about is resumes. Now, if you're sending a resume out and you're not getting a response, there could be some good reasons for that. Antonio, what advice would you give?
So many companies are asking for applicants to send resumes electronically, either directly to somebody in the company or post it on a platform like either a Monster or the company's website. And when you post your resume electronically, most people don't appreciate that the resume is actually scanned through a scanner, which is a machine that actually looks at your resume and tries to identify key code words that it wants in your resume that aligns with the company's values and the job descriptions. So if you're posting your resume electronically, you have to make sure that your resume includes those key code words.
Fascinating. And how do you know what those are?
Well, the job description probably includes some words that really will stand out to you about the job, as well as really the company's culture. So without misrepresenting yourself, you need to include those code words throughout your resume so that the scanner, not a person, the scanner picks up on that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, your resume goes into a deep hole and you'll probably never hear from the company because, of course, a scanner won't respond to you.
Very good advice. Raina, how about you? What tips would you offer on creating the ideal resume?
My thoughts are more along the line of how can you make yourself look as good as possible. So if you have holes in your history, and just about everybody does, but some are more extreme than others, or areas that you're embarrassed about, or maybe you're concerned about ageism or something else, or there's a skill you want to de-emphasize, my point is to move the information around to highlight what you want highlighted and to de-emphasize what you want de-emphasized. So it's more along the lines of if somebody has not worked for a while or they have holes, how can they rearrange the information to tell the truth and yet highlight what they want
to highlight? So can you give an example or two of how you do that? I guess you don't have to have the resume in chronological order anymore.
So for example, you don't have to put the date that you graduated if you really don't want to point out that it was a long time ago. You don't have to put the same objective at the top of the resume. You can have different versions of your resume for different kinds of jobs that you're applying for. You can re-spin while telling the truth some time that you spent away from the work world. If you were traveling, whatever you were doing, you don't have to say it baldly the way that you might explain it to your best friend. And yet still, you must tell the truth.
I totally agree with that because the chronological resume where you give the years that you worked for certain companies may not be appropriate for many people. Therefore, you go to what is called a functional resume. You identify, as Raina has been saying, the key skills that you have, and you actually describe those skills and the accomplishments you've been able to arrive at using those skills. Therefore, you don't have to describe gaps. Mm-hmm. And I agree, we've all had gaps in our background that perhaps we don't want to share with someone else,
right,
or is very difficult to explain. So use a functional resume in that kind of situation.
And that can mean emphasizing the things that you are good at, your strong mm-hmm. points, the assets mm-hmm. and the values, and the things that you can bring to the company, the ways that you can help them.
Exactly. This resume, as we're saying, is really your calling card. It's saying who you are and what you can contribute to the organization for the company to solve its problems. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you're telling your story. I mean, Raina and I are both authors, so we know a lot about storytelling. But storytelling also means that you can tell the truth by editing out information of your life that is not relevant or appropriate for this particular job. And that's totally ethical, totally appropriate, totally legal.
And some of my clients say, you know, isn't that lying? And you're saying not to lie. But in the social work field or in the counseling field, we talk about reframing.
You gave an interesting example of that, the fellow that had been doing the cooking while he was in prison.
Right. There was a client who had done a lot of cooking while he was in prison, and he really loved cooking, and he wanted to go back to school, and he wanted to firm up that experience with a degree. And so we rearranged his resume so it really highlighted the number of people he had cooked for.
And in the state institution.
Yes. And it gave him the confidence, I think, to present himself better. And I want to mention another pet peeve about resumes, though, which is that if there are lots of errors on the resume, it really bothers me. I don't know if that's the writer in me, but
I would agree with that. You want to have somebody edit it. If English isn't your strong point, have somebody edit it who has those skills.
Right.
Yes. You're right. You want proper words. You want proper sentence structure. You want punctuation. And you want the resume to speak to the person who will be looking at the resume. For example, if you're an IT specialist and you have so many IT technical words or phrases that only IT people can understand, then your resume is not going to be very, very good. Or if you're coming out of the military and you talk about your military background using military lingo for a civilian job, that civilian company may not understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So know who your readership is and write your resume to that reader.
That's so true. I had an example of that myself. I helped a friend with a resume. He had done mainframe computers for large corporations. No job after 2 years of looking. And I looked at it and said, well, the problem is the resume is in geek speak. It was all the different programs he knew. I said, an HR person is going to want to know what that means and what you can do for their company. Have you ever saved the company you worked for money with everything you did? And it turned out he'd saved them a lot of money. So we rewrote it. Within a week, he had two interviews, and one of them turned into a very good job for him.
Well, that's great, and a great example of sort of knowing who your readership is and responding to the readership.
Now, something new that today's job hunters have to deal with that maybe my generation didn't need to is social networking, which can be a plus, but it can also be a drawback if the employer is reading about your wild and crazy past, or worse, your wild and crazy present on there. What advice would you give, Antonio, to job hunters about how to handle your social networking?
Well, social networking is really what it claims to be. It's meant to exchange social information with people of similar likes. What companies use social networking for is to find out opportunities to disqualify you from jobs and disqualify you from their company. So you've got to be very careful about what you put on your social network page, even though you may think it's only going to your friends, your 5 million friends that you have around the world. It's going to more than your 5 million friends because that information is public knowledge. You have to be very careful about what you say, who you talk about, and about your background, because it will and can be used against you for a job search. My caution is be very careful. Twitter, Facebook are the social networks, but LinkedIn, which is more business-driven, you certainly want to be much more business talk and discussion and not have anything about your personal life with your LinkedIn account.
And I suggest that you just Google yourself. Go on the computer and see what comes up. And you'll see that your history is there. And to realize that your fingerprint is on everything that you do. Keep that in mind when you're out there having fun, because it's not just for your friends, as Tony was saying.
Mm-hmm. And you maybe, if you have things up there that an employer might find objectionable, you may want to go on and take some of those party photos off of Facebook.
That's right. And also think about, going back to what you're saying before about the resume, we didn't discuss holes in the resume. Mm-hmm. I think that just like you might take photos down off Facebook, you might think about, what parts of my history do I not need to mention because it's not relevant? Again, it's not lying, because not everyone needs to know every piece of the story. You don't get all of the backstory. So if you don't want it out there, then it can't be out there. Mm-hmm. You can't have both.
And I also agree that even during the interview, when you're face-to-face with someone, if someone asks you a question that is not relevant to your ability to perform the job, a legitimate answer is to ask the question back, why are you asking me this? I don't see how it relates to my job performance. And you've got to sort of stand up and be bold about some things.
Would that be considered at all rude?
If a person is asking me something about my background that doesn't relate to the job, and they're nosy to that extent during the face-to-face, that may not be the kind of company that I want to work for. Mm-hmm.
So you're interviewing them as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be a two-way process. But speaking now from an HR perspective, we do not like to have someone else control the interview. We want to control the interview.
Right.
So you're right. You have to be very careful about appearing to be very standoffish or tough or rough. But I think each of us have got to decide what we're going to share and what we're not going to share.
I think the bottom line is enthusiasm, genuine, authentic enthusiasm. If you have holes in your history, or you don't have much experience in this new field, or you're going back to school, or you're insecure for one reason or another, maybe you've been home raising kids and you're going back into the work world. If you're excited about the work for real, then they'll pick that up. Now, if you're not, that's where it takes more crafting and thought and repackaging so you can find something about it to be enthusiastic. Because again, I think people know when it's not authentic. I don't know, do you agree with that?
I totally agree. Is when you're interviewing someone who seems to be bored with about the topic that you're talking about, which is the job, and they're bored about what the company is about, its products or services, you begin to ask yourself, this person doesn't have any passion. And without passion, there's going to be boredom. And with boredom, there's going to be bad job performance. So you have to step it up. Or you simply don't interview for jobs and companies that you don't want to be part of. It's simply wasting everyone's time.
Very good point. Back to the interview itself, how should you dress for the interview?
I think you have to dress for the culture of the company and for the job. For example, at one time, I was interviewing for a vice president of human resources position in a company whose culture was very casual, which means that people dressed in casual clothes, there were no business suits, there were no ties. But I didn't know that. So I came into the job interview dressed in a dark suit with a white shirt and a dark tie with shiny shoes. And people looked at me as if I didn't belong. And even though the interview occurred, it was a short interview, and I knew exactly at the moment in time when I was rejected. And that is, I didn't look the part. Mm-hmm. So therefore, again, know the audience that you're interviewing with and dress mm-hmm. for the audience's success. Don't dress the way you want to dress.
This is relevant with tattoos and piercings. Something may be part of your personal style, but it may not be something you want to show up front. So I mm-hmm. think if you have a lot of tattoos on your arms and things like that, you might yeah. want to wear long sleeves in the beginning until you see what the climate is, what the culture is.
Right. Unless you're applying mm-hmm. to a tattoo parlor, that's right. probably wise advice.
Right.
What about the best places to find jobs nowadays? There's all kinds of electronic options out there we didn't used to have. Has the age-old advice of contacts count changed?
Contacts and networking count more than ever before. In the HR world, we call it shoulder tapping, which means that you know somebody who knows somebody who knows where there's a job opportunity. And that's really the best way today, unfortunately, where jobs get filled, is that you get to know somebody who knows where a job opportunity may exist or can introduce you to somebody who may be interviewing for certain kinds of jobs. So the idea of networking, become part of professional groups. So if you're an accounting person, join the accounting professional groups. If you're a human resources professional, join human resources professional groups to get to know the people who are in the profession that you want to be in, because your name will get referred to. I'm not saying don't submit resumes coldly, and I'm not saying do not respond to job ads, but the shoulder tapping and the personal contacts is paramount today.
And I suggest to students to hoard business cards. So anytime you go somewhere, you hear a speaker, those business associations you're talking about, get a business card from everybody and put them in one book. And then when you're trying to make contact and looking out there for a job, you know, email everybody and say, I saw you speak at this and that. It's more personal.
Yes, and passing out your own business cards yes. is important too. I yes. can say the best job I ever had was an editor I had met at a party, had handed her the card, never got any writing work from her, but she passed my card along the next day right. to someone who called asking for writers, and I wound up with a full-time editing job out of that.
That's an excellent example, because even though you're considering working for a corporation, you know, a large company or even a small and medium-sized company, where you'll get a business card from the company, having your personal business card with your name, your contact, and your functional area of expertise is really sort of paramount. Mm-hmm. And you know, Rena, I've always kind of wondered why students never ask us as faculty members for our business cards. They should be doing that on a regular basis, because we are experts in a certain area that they may be able to leverage down the road.
Mm-hmm. At the Honor Society, I do encourage them to get business mm-hmm. cards from every speaker who comes in, but you're right, they don't usually ask us.
Well, thank you both for joining us here today, and we really appreciate you taking the time to come in and share your expertise with our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with KNSJ on the East County Magazine Show. I'm here today with Elizabeth Liu, the founder and CEO of Nile Sisters, an organization helping refugee women and their families here in San Diego. Elizabeth is a winner of the KNSJ People's Microphone Award for her efforts, and she has also received the Eleanor Roosevelt Humanitarian Award from the San Diego chapter of the United Nations. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Now, you yourself were a refugee. Elizabeth, you were born in the Sudan, and then when that country became war-torn as a very small child, you and your family moved to Uganda as refugees. What was life like living in a refugee camp?
It is very difficult to be a refugee in the first place. As a refugee in a camp, I experienced a lot of injustice and violence and all that, just like any other refugees who fled here to United States might have experienced in the camps where they came from. My experience as a child in a refugee camp is that one day I was in school.
How old were you?
I think I was 7 or 8.
And what happened?
What happened was that there was a coup. Idi Amin took over from Obote. The soldiers of Idi Amin were collecting soldiers of Obote, and that was very violent.
So you were in the classroom, and one of these soldiers fleeing Idi Amin's army came running in, and what happened?
One of the soldiers ran in our classroom. That was really in the morning after we finished our parade, roll call and everything. We just entered in our class. And this soldier came and ran in our classroom, and the other soldier of Idi Amin pursued the man, and just he was tied down in front of us, the class, and we saw the man was cocking gun, and he pulled out the knife from the gun, the band, and just stabbed this other soldier right there in front of us.
So they bayoneted this man
yes.
in front of these small children. How horrifying
yes.
that must have
yes.
been.
Blood was everywhere, all over. And us, the small children, who were screaming and running to the door to escape for our lives, you can just imagine the situation.
And then the school officials told you all to run home.
Yes. When the headmaster of the school saw the violence in the school, he just blew the whistle, brrr, like this, and all the students came out, and he commanded us to leave the school. You know, there was no direction. In this situation, you cannot give direction, and there was no nothing. Call 911, dial this number to call police to bring situation into order.
So what did you do?
Everybody was running. I ran for my life. I ran like 3-4 miles. I ran as if my chest was just bursting, as if I was, you know, losing my breath. But there was nothing I could do other than just keep running.
And what happened when you got home?
When I got home, I found my parents deserted our home. Nobody was at home. And at that point, I just continued running. Take the road that I know. Usually we go that way to stream or to get water. I just ran. And at the end, I found our neighbors in the bush, and they saw me, they welcomed me, they said, shh, don't cry, don't say anything, don't talk. They pulled me, and one of the women put me on her chest. I was just breathing so hard, but they kept me until when situation got a little bit, and then they escaped with me going to look for my parents. And after some distance, then we got my parents, and my dad grabbed me, he put me on his neck. Now that was late evening, we are trying to cross the river, go to the other side, where situation is at least better. So the river was flooded, and I could see my dad was really struggling to make sure both of us, he and myself, we are safe. And he was pushing the water from his mouth.
So he had you on his shoulders carrying
yes,
you across?
Yes, he put me on his shoulders, and he was walking through the river.
And how deep was the water?
He pushed the water with his right hand. He was holding one of my legs, and I was holding him on his forehead. I was just on his neck, and the situation was so tough. And
so it was up to his chest or his neck?
The water was almost to his chin.
My goodness.
That was how deep he was.
So you finally found a safe haven on the other side for a while, still in Uganda.
Yes.
And then in 1972, a peace accord was signed in the Sudan. And so in 1973, you went back to the homeland that you hadn't seen since you were a very little girl. And I understand you went to school there and got married. Is that
correct?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, after a peace accord, which was called the Addis Ababa Agreement between South and North Sudan, was signed, my parents came home and we started life from scratch.
So Elizabeth went to school, she got her degrees, studied family science and public health, and she got married and had five children. But then in 1988, civil war broke out in the Sudan, and once again, she was forced to become a refugee, this time going to Kenya. Elizabeth, tell us what happened next.
Yes, my family and I, we left North Sudan and went to Kenya. That was in 1996, and we were in Kenya for about 3 years, and then we got the resettlement opportunity to come to United States.
How difficult was it making a new home in a new country that was so very different than what you had known?
The systems in each and every country is very difficult. But most importantly, for us refugees who come to United States, we find it very difficult, very, very difficult, because the job search here is different, the culture is different, language is different, healthcare system is different. Everything is just very difficult.
You mentioned even the challenges of navigating the freeways.
Here. Exactly. Navigating freeways. We talk about freeways here, but back home in some of the countries I went to and I come from, we don't have freeways. And you are one way here. You see, our two ways.
So you decided you wanted to give back to help other people who'd been through the kinds of things that you've been through, or in some cases, even worse. A lot of people may not realize that San Diego is now the number one refugee resettlement city in America. We take in more refugees each year than even New York City or Los Angeles. So you started the Nile Sisters in 2001. Tell us what your vision was for the organization.
My vision was that I struggled so much to get integrated in the system, and yet I am educated. And I imagine those refugees who are here in the United States and in San Diego, but they had never had opportunity to go to school in their home countries. How hard it is for them to get services, to get integrated. So I started Nile Sisters to help those who are coming to San Diego to get integrated, beginning with the very basic service, learning how to drive and drive on freeway, learning English as a second language so they can be able to communicate with their neighbors, with the people in the community. Even to get a job, they need to be able to communicate with the people.
So you have literacy programs, you have job programs, and you help them get medical care. Now, I understand that some of the women have special needs.
Right. We have prenatal and a child health program. In this program, we work with refugees from accessing health to childbirth. And after birth, how you take care of newborn and how you feed.
And you've told me some of the women were afraid to go to a hospital. They were actually giving birth in their apartments right here in San Diego.
That is so true. In fact, this project is started because through our outreach in the community, we found that some of our refugee women, they give birth in their apartments instead of going to a hospital. And we asked them why this happened. They said, well, one of their neighbors went to hospital to deliver, and she delivered through C-section. And that was so terrifying to them.
They said they were afraid they would be cut open if
exactly,
they went to the hospital.
Exactly. They were afraid that they would be operated, their womb would be opened, and no one wants that.
No.
So
you also provide programs for preschool children, and you help families also, I understand, to help their own children with their homework.
Yes, we have a preschool program for refugee children from age 3 to 5. But when we started this project, we thought we were helping the children, but we found that we are not only helping the children, but we are helping the parents as well. Because most of these parents, they did not have opportunity to go to school. And now teaching their children the ABC, the 1, 2, 3, the colors, the names of fruits and vegetables is like teaching the parents. And so we are educating the whole family in this project.
Now you have people coming from Haiti, Burma, the Middle East, African nations such as the Sudan, Kenya, Somalia.
When Nile Sisters started, initially we started with the African refugees. But as our program grows, we now serve all refugees from Burma, from Middle East, like Afghanistan, Iraqis, Iranians. We also help refugees from Haiti. Everybody in the community, all the refugees in the community who need our service, we just work with them.
So to make it very clear, the people that you serve, for our listeners who may not know the differences, these are not illegal immigrants. These are people who came here with refugee status, which is granted by an international agency, typically the United Nations. Is that how that works?
Correct. All refugees who come from overseas, they have gone through all screens, being health and background check.
So it's and they're persecuted. It's been deemed that it's not safe for them to go back home. They have no other place to go.
Correct. They are refugees and they are not criminals. They have all their criminal background checked, their health issues checked to make sure they are healthy. They are not bringing communicable diseases here in the United States.
Your program is designed not simply as a handout, but more to teach the people how to be self-sufficient and contributing members of society here in the United States.
Correct. As I worked hard to overcome all the barriers and become self-sufficient myself, that is what I teach all refugees who are coming to San Diego. Current programs we have, the driving, the certified nursing assistant, childcare, ESL, and job search. These programs are supported and funded by Office of Refugee Resettlement.
And you've had some amazing successes. You serve over 1,000 people a year now on average. And that's not just women and their families, although that was the primary goal when you started, but you've also served men and boys. Can you tell us the story of the lost boys of the Sudan who you helped?
When I said we are working with refugee women and families, we are not serving only women. We are serving men, women, their children, and everybody. Example of the lost boys from Sudan is that when they got here, we worked with them.
These were little boys who were forced to be child soldiers.
Correct. When they left South Sudan, they were less than 10 years old.
My goodness.
They wandered in wilderness. They crossed the desert, came to Kenya, Kakuma refugee camps and Gadahali and all those camps. When they came to United States, to San Diego here, I myself, being a South Sudanese, I know our culture. In our culture, men don't enter kitchen. So these lost boys, they don't have wives. They don't have sisters here. So I took the role of becoming a surrogate mom and educating them on how to do grocery shopping, nutrition, how to prepare food, and how to take care of their apartments and cleaning their appliances and so forth. And also, we trained them to drive and be good drivers.
As they got older, yes.
Yes. And we also did mentoring. We did a lot of connections to them with the host community members, with the churches, with the all, you know, friends that we can get. And now the Lost Boys of Sudan are one of the very successful groups of refugees here in the United States.
How are they doing now today?
They are doing very, very well. I'm so grateful and very honored to be part of their success. These boys went to colleges, prestigious colleges. They went to community colleges as well.
Cuyamaca College right here in East County.
Some of them went to Cuyamaca City College, and they went to Point Loma Nazarene University, to San Diego State, UCSD. And, I mean, they all graduated with the very good grades.
Good jobs.
Yes, they get good jobs, and I'm very pleased.
Very good. Well, you are doing amazing work, Elizabeth, and I'm so pleased that you're able to join us today. And congratulations again on being a recipient of the KNSJ People's Microphone Awards. And I'm just delighted that they're able to bestow this honor. You're a very, very deserving person.
Thank you so much. We are only able to provide all these services and keep our door open for refugees through support from community members, from our friends, the board members of Nile Sisters. They love the Nile Sisters. They give us big support. They're always with us, and I'm just honored.
Where are your offices located, Elizabeth?
We are right in the middle of refugees in City Heights. Mm-hmm. We are on University. Our address is 6035 University Avenue, suite number 22, San Diego, California, 92115.
That's just a couple of blocks outside of La Mesa for our East County listeners. Do you need donations, volunteers, supplies? How can people help?
Always, always we are looking for donations, and always we are looking for volunteers. We do tremendous job, but this job we can only do it when people come and give us support, and we always appreciate donations coming our way.
You can get more information at www.nilesisters.org. Elizabeth, thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much. One very quick announcement I would like to make.
Yes.
That Nile Sisters annual banquet is coming up.
When is the annual banquet?
It's going to be in September 21st. Mm-hmm. It's a brunch at 11 a.m. up to 1 p.m. at La Jolla Presbyterian Church.
Very good.
And the information is on our website. People can go to nilesisters.org and click on events, and you will get all the information. We invite everybody to come and support us and also meet the clients we work with, the people we serve. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
You're welcome, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining us today on 89.1 FM Descanso on the East County Magazine Show.
Gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Harry.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. Today we bring you some fascinating facts about our local agriculture. Did you know that San Diego County has more small farms under 10 acres than any other county in America? We also have the 12th largest farm economy in the entire United States out of more than 3,000 counties. San Diego County is the nation's largest producer of avocados and nursery crops. We're the second largest producer of guavas, pomegranates, limes, and macadamia nuts. And we're number 3 in honey production, sweet, and number 5 in lemons, 9th in strawberry production, and 10th in egg-laying hens. We also have the second most farms owned by women of any county in the United States. Farming contributes over $5 billion in annual revenue to San Diego County's economy. Our farmers help us maintain open space and rural character. And all of those fruit trees and other crops, well, they also help sequester carbon to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that can contribute to global warming. Although San Diego County has over 6,000 farmers, 65% are 9 acres or less in size. Our high water costs mean growers often choose products that have a high dollar value per acre, hence some of those exotic crops. And fortunately, our mild Mediterranean climate makes it easy for farmers to grow crops nearly year-round. You can purchase locally grown products at farmers markets, roadside fruit stands, and other locations across our region. If you're looking for East County farmers markets, you can find those in our guide to fresh local foods at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Or for countywide listings, check the San Diego Farm Bureau's website at www.sdfarmbureau.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm interviewing Lisa Monica Gonzalez, author and advocate of child safety. Through her children's books and public speaking, she aims to provide resources to adults to guard children against sexual predators and empower adults of the future. Welcome, Lisa. It's a pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your story, Sinlessness, is one of 40 true stories in a best-selling anthology by Lisa Nichols called Unbreakable Spirit, Rising Above the Impossible. Can you tell us a little about this collection and how your story became part of it?
This anthology was written to help people with proof, with evidence, that everyone has something in their lives that are a challenge and that you can make it through it to the other side, that the spirit truly is unbreakable. The stories go from a woman in self-defense when her husband tries to attack her with domestic violence, all right, the way to a woman going to New York and helping the firemen after the towers went down, to my story, which is about a survivor of child sexual abuse. So it's all across the board. And I just had an opportunity to be in the book, and I grabbed it.
Okay. So your story is of resilience for people of all ages and all situations.
Yes.
About bouncing back and healing from pain.
Exactly.
Well, do you plan to continue as an inspirational writer, educating others from your experience, or are you going to branch out in another direction?
Well, I had an opportunity to help a friend of mine pull together another anthology, and it is called Unheard Voices of Redemption, and it's going to be coming out in July, and the authors in that book are either survivors of human trafficking, or it could be someone like a director of a nonprofit for human trafficking, someone who has a safe house. Mm-hmm. It's all across the board, again, as to who's in this book. I gave them my short story from Unbreakable Spirit. I also wrote a poem as well. So I do continue writing. That will always be forever. Once you're a writer, you're a writer. So that's my next step. And then I am branching out to consulting on publishing. Hmm. I've done it several times, over and over, for free. And I've thought of charging, but they're always my friends. But through that experience, it's given me confidence. And so I actually created a class called Publish My Book. And it's an extracurricular class for children, second grade to fifth grade. Through the schools. Actually, we piloted the class at Rhodes in Encinitas, and it went very well. So the children actually wrote and illustrated their books, and then I got them published.
How exciting.
I got them ISBNs, I got them library control numbers, I mean, truly official books.
So wow, if they exciting.
Want to, yeah, they want to sell them on Amazon or put them in the library, and they are thrilled, and the confidence that it built in them is priceless.
Well, that brings us to your children's book, Jesse's Dream, which I understand that you wrote and illustrated while you were in grade school in the 1970s. In fact, you created Jesse's Dream while you were the child being abused, the child described in Sinlessness. What's that like for you? Not only telling your story, but sharing it with the world, you know, the actual art of the child who suffered the abuse.
I think that being able to see that story, because my mother gave it to me after Unbreakable Spirit was out, and she found it in the drawer, and she said, maybe you could do something with this now that you're in the publishing world. And it really threw me back, because when I read it, we're not sure if I wrote it before or after, but when you read it, I think it really happened after. Mm-hmm. This child really wanted control in the story of the people that hurt her.
Right.
And she was empowered with that. And probably, you know, you feel powerless when you're a survivor of child sexual abuse. Right. It was probably my way of coping. And writing has always been my way of coping through my whole life. So it really was a thrill to find it. And it was quite an accomplishment to self-publish it as well and put it out there.
Writing can be a way to heal, a way to gain confidence, a way to cope with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for sharing all that with us, Lisa. Our time is up, but it's been great talking to you. For more information on Lisa Monica Gonzalez, please visit her website at www.lisamonicagonzalez.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.